Christopher, welcome to Foreign Connect podcast today. Thank you very much for coming to the show.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
Yeah. So I wanted to start this interview from asking you about your background. Can you tell me what have you done and also what you do right now with your current company?
Sure. Happy to. I've spent probably 25 to 30 years of my career, primarily kind of a blend between financial services and technology. I worked for several of the large Canadian banks in a variety of different roles, lending, alternate banking, remote banking, electronic banking. After many years in that, in the big kind of corporate large banks, mm-hmm. I moved to a large Canadian fintech company, mm-hmm. called D&H, which was, about a couple of years ago acquired by a more global company called Finastra. Mm-hmm. And what I did there was, I led, a big chunk of their, SaaS software as a service, digital banking platforms. Mm-hmm. Primarily, we had a program for the federal government, ran the student lending program, mm-hmm. for the government of Canada, mm-hmm. Ran a really interesting platform for security search, registration, and recovery, mm-hmm. And then ran the largest mortgage origination platform in Canada with about 98% market share. So I did that for about 5 years, mm-hmm. Then I moved on and was chief operating officer of a mid-sized Canadian bank, mm-hmm. with a focus on lending. Mm-hmm. And then for the last couple of years, I started in and run an operation called the Freestone Group. Mm-hmm. And what we are is we're a boutique consulting firm, mm-hmm. That specialize in digital transformation, mm-hmm. And in connecting fintechs and creating strategic alliances between fintechs and large financial institutions and other corporate partners.
Wow, that's very impressive and very interesting as well. Can you tell me a little bit more about what you do exactly with digital transformation? Like, how do you coach businesses to make that?
Yeah, it's as you pointed out when we talked earlier, it's a big challenge for most businesses.
Yeah.
One of the things that I do is really come in. I work at a couple of different levels with my clients. One is, mm-hmm. at the strategic level. Mm-hmm. So what I find is a lot of companies get very attracted and are very interested in buying software. Mm-hmm. And they want to jump to sort of purchasing the software.
Right.
But what I've found to be more successful, mm-hmm. is to really step back and have a strategy, mm-hmm. around your digital transformation. And that, mm-hmm. strategy should really be driven by what are the benefits you're trying to create for, mm-hmm. your customers and your, mm-hmm. operation. Mm-hmm. So really it's around client experience, mm-hmm. and operational efficiency. Mm. And, you know, to quote an old story, if you don't know where you're going, you won't know when you get there. Mm-hmm. So having that thinking and that strategy, which I call sometimes go slow to go fast, mm-hmm. do the thinking and the strategic work around where you want to go and why, and, mm-hmm. then line up your plans against that. Mm. One of the mistakes that I see people make, again, as I mentioned earlier, is they tend to jump to the software and the technology part first. Mm-hmm. And what I advocate is really take a deep dive and look at your existing processes, mm-hmm. because a lot of the value that can be unlocked in transformation is in streamlining and modernizing your processes. Mm-hmm. And once your processes are streamlined, the next level is automating them through the use of technology. Mm. So what I do is I help companies think through and develop a strategy along those lines. Mm-hmm. And then I continue to work with them through execution and delivery of the projects that support that strategy.
Mm, very interesting. Do you limit the function of that digital transformation? Like, do you limit that to strictly relating to finance function of the business or any function?
No, you know what? That's a really good point. I think you have to approach it holistically, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And it has to, it can't just be finance, it has to be operations, manufacturing, and the one that gets overlooked the most is people, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So if you're going to automate or digitally transform a part of your operation, you, mm-hmm. have to take the people into account. They're sometimes they'll have to be retrained on new systems. Mm. They'll have to collaborate. Sometimes even their jobs will change, mm-hmm. right? Certain mm-hmm. jobs will go away and new jobs will be created mm-hmm. To affect that transformation. Mm-hmm. And I would say the number one overlooked element in that is the, mm-hmm. the people change management piece of it.
Hmm. Interesting. So right now, do you help usually smaller company, mid-sized companies, corporation? Who do you usually help with your?
It's kind of split. I don't do a lot of really large corporations mm-hmm. because they have a lot of in-house staff and they do a lot of things themselves. Mm-hmm. I tend to focus on mid-sized to smaller corporations mm-hmm. For a couple of reasons, because I like to deal with the business owner, the principal, mm-hmm. because they understand what they're trying to accomplish. Mm-hmm. Frankly, they tend to be a little more willing to adopt new practices and move mm-hmm. quicker, and because they're always challenging. They're trying to take on the big guys. Mm-hmm. So they're more willing to embrace new concepts and new capabilities to mm-hmm. remain competitive.
Wow. That's very interesting. Okay, so the next question is, you seem to have a lot of operation experience in business from your yep. background. What kind of quality do you look for in like a good operational manager in a business?
That's a great question. And I'm going to kind of take it at the high level. Mm-hmm. I think number one, attention to detail. Mm-hmm. Operations is really around focus and attention to detail. Mm-hmm. Number two is an attitude towards continuous learning. Mm-hmm. So even though you know how it's done today, mm-hmm. you have to be looking to the future to mm-hmm. understand how it could be done and how the market is moving and how your competitors are moving mm-hmm. And to be looking, constantly be learning about how to do that. Mm-hmm. And I think an operations manager, while they have attention to detail, also needs to think about how that operation impacts both the customer experience mm-hmm. and the employee experience. Mm-hmm. So for example, mm-hmm. I could design a process that was very efficient, mm-hmm. but if it was very difficult for my team to use mm-hmm. and it was very difficult for my customers, that efficiency is not going to win me anything. Mm-hmm. So you're constantly striving for efficiency, but it has mm-hmm. to be within the context of the user and customer experience.
Interesting. So that actually leads me another question. You said that communication, when you increase efficiency, your communication matters, right? Like to the customer end or the employee end. Like, is there any Absolutely. Sort of smooth communication method that you recommend for companies to, or transition, or, you know?
Well, you know, I'll give you an interesting example from an assignment I just did. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons why companies hire me, I'll give you an yeah. example. A client was going through a very difficult transformation and it was not going well. Mm-hmm. So I was brought in to help diagnose why it wasn't going well and mm-hmm. help them get it back on track. Mm-hmm. One of the things I discovered was that there was a breakdown in communication at all levels. Mm-hmm. So within the company, different departments weren't speaking to each other. Mm-hmm. And then the company wasn't communicating well with their outside technology providers and vendors. Mm. So one of the things, and again, it's not really fancy, mm-hmm. but I set up sort of just regular touch points mm-hmm. Between all the stakeholders and all the parties mm-hmm. so that people didn't have to guess or think what was going on, mm-hmm. That they were actually involved in an ongoing communication and conference. Mm. So I think creating the environment to have that dialogue and recognizing mm. that people are on a team, mm. even if that team is made up of internal, external, and vendors, mm. it's still a team that's dedicated to driving this outcome. Mm. And that team has to have regular touch points. Mm. To facilitate that, mm-hmm. because a lot of these teams were remote, mm-hmm. I use a variety of online tools. Mm-hmm. And I'm a big believer in accountability. Mm-hmm. So when you're doing a large transformation or a large undertaking, mm-hmm. you have to understand who's accountable to deliver what by when. Mm-hmm. And that needs to be transparent and mm-hmm. visible to everybody. So if I'm relying on you and you said you're going to deliver something by Saturday, then that you have to sign up for that. That needs to be tracked and visible. And if it doesn't happen, everybody sees it, gets to know where it's gone wrong and can then work together to try and resolve it.
Interesting. So when you catch that problem, right, that came down to it was a communication problem.
Yep.
How did you diagnose that? How did you pinpoint that problems? Or like, how do you usually diagnose different kinds of problems?
Well, I usually do with a kind of a classic a project management tool called a RACI chart. And that's really sort of understanding the accountabilities between the parties. And then what I like to do is I like to really identify who's the key contact for each key element in the transformation. And I typically interview them and I really try and understand what's important to them, what their capabilities are, what their gaps are, and how to help them, and then do that and build a network across all the other people. What I often find in that exercise is that there'll be gaps. Like, for example, some of the people that often get left out are the compliance and data security people. If you're going to do any type of work online, data security is extremely important, and you can't bring those guys in the day before launch. They have to build the quality in throughout the project, so you need to engage them early in the process. And a lot of companies, I think, take too narrow a view of who should be involved in the project. I think it needs to be a broader group, because the last thing you want to have happen is get almost to launch and then have the data security guys go, you can't launch because it's not secure. So building that matrix of who the important stakeholders are, and then building a mechanism to keep them informed and keep the dialogue going, I think is critical to success.
I see. That's a very interesting point. So I know that you had, once again, a lot of experience with fintech companies, right? Fintech is an industry you're very experienced with. What about fintech do you find interesting? And what about fintech do you find it exciting?
I think it's fintech's a very interesting space. One of the things I love about it is the energy, the creativity. So the one thing that's really key to fintech is they're taking something that's well understood, well established, right? You know, financial transactions, banking's been around for hundreds of years, maybe thousands, hundreds here, thousands in Japan. and they're trying to rethink how to do things better. How to do things faster, more efficiently, more cost effectively, with a better customer experience. So I love the creativity and the energy that goes behind that. I'm a bit of a geek, so I also love the technology side. So I love the fact that in to do this, they're leveraging emerging technologies. I like the pace. I mean, it's fast, it's dynamic. One of the things I didn't like when I was in the corporate world is it takes a very long time to make a decision. In a fintech company, you get the right three people in a room, you can have a decision in an hour.
Wow.
That's kind of exciting.
I see. Do you find any startups that's interesting? Like any Canadian, right? Like you're Canada based.
Yep.
Do you find any Canadian startups, particularly working on interesting fintech ideas?
There's a few. I think one of the things that's really interesting, I'm located in Toronto, and Toronto is one of, if not the top global hub for artificial intelligence. We have a program at the University of Toronto that's world renowned for its for developing AI masters and doctorate level people. And that's created a real energy around artificial intelligence in Toronto. And there's some really interesting things going on in that space. And there's just a whole passel of emerging AI companies that are really looking at applying artificial intelligence to all sorts of aspects of fintech and reg tech and mm-hmm. medical tech, and it's really moving quite quickly. So that's an exciting space generally without mm-hmm. specific companies.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any? Mm-hmm. Sorry, I didn't mean to.
FinTech is also a big space here. Mm-hmm. Toronto's a big finance center.
Yeah.
In an odd sort of way, mm-hmm. I think Canada has benefited from restrictive immigration policies in the US mm-hmm. because a lot of high-end global talent mm-hmm. Is now has a much harder time in moving to the US. So mm-hmm. they move to Canada instead.
Mm.
So we have a lot of, even the big US companies, Google, mm. Apple, Amazon mm. are rapidly expanding their capabilities here. Because it's a very deep talent market mm. and the ability to tap the global markets. I was just on a call this morning from Taipei.
Oh,
right. So it's becoming a very global, an open global hub, mm-hmm. whereas the current environment in the US is a bit more restrictive.
Mm.
So their ability to think globally and internationally seems to be at this point in time a bit more restricted.
I see. So
companies that come to mind, there's a company called Flinx that does some really interesting data work in financial services. They've done very well. Mm-hmm. There's a small fintech I've done work with called Savvy AI mm-hmm. That does really interesting work in digital lending, digital mortgage lending and processing.
Mm-hmm.
It's an exciting time here. It's been a lot of growth in the space.
I see. So that kind of leads me to the next question, which is, what kind of cross-cultural opportunity do you see between Japanese company and Japanese companies partnering with international market in fintech industry?
I think huge opportunities, and I wouldn't just limit it to Japan. Mm-hmm. I would think, you know, where I'm seeing the most interesting things happening mm-hmm. is with companies that are taking sort of a global approach. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, prior to sort of the technology revolution, mm-hmm. People tend to be very narrowly focused mm-hmm. on what's happening close to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think now you can't survive doing that. The only way to survive and compete is to really have a global mindset
mm-hmm.
and to look all over the place for ideas.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the things, Japan in specific, mm-hmm. Obviously big technology leaders. So mm-hmm. lots of technological expertise in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
Historically, mm-hmm. Tons of operational process leadership out of Japan, like the whole Kanban concept, process engineering, a lot of those concepts came out of Japan.
Mm-hmm.
So now what's happening is how do you translate those concepts, which are developed in more of a manufacturing environment, and mm-hmm. how do you move them into the digital space?
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, combining that sort of mindset that and capabilities that exist in Japan,
mm-hmm.
which some of the emerging technologies and thoughts that are happening in, you know, North America, Europe, elsewhere in Asia,
mm-hmm.
Potentially create some really interesting opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not aware of the state of digital transformation in Japan, so I don't mm-hmm. know where that's at on the curve.
Mm-hmm.
I can say in Canada, it's underway, but mm-hmm. a lot of companies in Canada, mm-hmm. I would say, have a long way to go to really fully adopt digital processes.
Mm, I see. This is just out of curiosity, personally.
Yeah.
How long do you predict, like, how long do we have ahead of us until we finally start seeing, like, lots of businesses, like, start operating on fully digital?
Yeah, you know, that's interesting. I think what's happening, or at least from my experience, what I'm seeing is people are starting in the back office.
Mm-hmm.
So they're kind of splitting it. They're starting in the front and the back. So mm-hmm. in the front, people are trying to put a more digital experience in front of the customer.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is, behind the scenes, uh-huh. it's still pretty old school.
Mm, yeah,
right.
Sure,
so
yeah.
those front end things are driven by, how do I appear to my customers to be more digital? mm-hmm. and how do I create a better customer experience? Mm-hmm. So, you know, we call it GUI, you know, graphic user interface. Mm-hmm. So how do I make a better interface? But mm-hmm. behind the scenes, it's still kind of clunky. Mm-hmm. And then at the other end, in the deep operational level, mm-hmm. Those initiatives are being driven by economic efficiency. Mm-hmm. So if I can take a process that takes an hour mm-hmm. and I can digitize that and turn it into 10 minutes, mm-hmm. that's going to save me a ton of money.
Yeah.
So to the outward consumer, it doesn't appear to be changing that quickly because those two pieces haven't met in the middle yet. So mm-hmm. you're getting that sort of user interface at the front mm-hmm. and you're getting some base operational efficiency at the back. Mm-hmm. And I think you'll see those things grow together. It's kind of like digging a tunnel from two ends, right? Mm-hmm. You know, you're digging from one end, you're digging at the other end, and the real yeah. breakthrough will be when the tunnels come together. Mm-hmm. So I'm a bit different than some people on this. I think it'll take longer than some people are saying. Mm. And part of that is some of these things are hard to do. Mm-hmm. They're expensive to do.
Yeah.
And companies' ability and appetite to undertake them, mm-hmm. Even though it's possible, mm-hmm. you know, like you may, you know, it's possible to do something, doesn't mean it's economically prudent to do it in the short term.
Mm.
So I think you'll see people sort of chip away at it and mm-hmm. there won't be a big bang where suddenly things will appear. Mm-hmm. I think you'll see things slowly move towards digital over the next sort of 5 to 10 years.
Mm. So I think I'm going to come to my final question, which sure. is, so we talked about customer experience and also employee experience
yes.
with digital, right? Like, how do you find that like optimal experience for both audience when you try to integrate digital operation in what they do?
Yeah, I think it's to go back to the AI example, right? Mm-hmm. So everybody's excited about AI. It's very exciting. But mm-hmm. I think where you'll see more advances in the near term is mm-hmm. what I would call human augmented AI.
Mm-hmm.
So the AI is in there doing some processes in the background, mm-hmm. but there's also human intervention. So I think you're going to see that in the next few years mm-hmm. where it's sort of where the AI is a support to a human interaction, not mm-hmm. completely taking over. Mm-hmm. I think what it really comes down to is usability and simplicity, mm-hmm. both for the employee, the user, mm-hmm. and for the customer. Mm-hmm. And the thing that gets, you know, I'll give you an example. I was working with was doing a digital transformation. I asked them why they were doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they couldn't answer me. That's a bad sign right there.
Right.
And when I did push them, they said, well, I'm creating a better experience for my customer.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, have you spoken to your customers? Do you know what kind of experience they're looking for?
Mm-hmm.
And they said, no.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you improve the customer experience if you don't understand what the customer is looking to do?
Mm-hmm.
So to answer your question, you know, research and understanding of what your customer wants to do and how they want to do it mm-hmm. is kind of a big first step on the path. There's no sense transforming mm-hmm. to an outcome that you don't know is going to be satisfactory to your customer.
Right.
And on the internal side, mm-hmm. I would say, you know, always think about, you know, the people who are going to deliver these processes. Mm-hmm. If the tools aren't there, if the training mm-hmm. isn't there, if their ability to interact with the process and the technology isn't well understood, mm-hmm. you're not going to deliver it.
Mm-hmm.
So it really comes down to knowledge of what the needs are mm-hmm. and the training on how to deliver it.
Mm, that makes a lot of sense. Well, today we learned a lot from you. Thank you very much for coming to my show. Before I let you go, I also want to quickly mention, where can people find you, Chris?
They can find me through my website at www.freestonegroup.ca.
Mm-hmm.
I'm on LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. They can find me there as well, Christopher White. And that's probably the best way to get a hold of me. And my email is chris@freestonegroup.ca.
Perfect. Well, thank you very much for coming to the show today.
Well, thank you very much.